2005 UTC right after the internet.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sponty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is Prince Nestor sitting in for Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the September 30th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Former Nigerian forward and 1994 African Football of the Year Emmanuel Amunike is pushing for a revision of the international football calendar to allow more African players to reach their potential and feature on the world's biggest stage. Several players have offered their input into a wide-ranging review on football's future, with some pushing for fewer international breaks and staging the World Cup every 2 years to increase competitive chances of smaller nations.
The important thing is the development of the players and seeing a very competitive competition. I think when you talk about the World Cup, every player dream is to, you know, play in the World Cup. I was privileged as a player to have played in the World Cup in 1994 in USA. And I think that is the highest that every player wants to dream, to be part of every event, mostly in the World Cup, because you can never know if you have the possibility of playing it again or not. The football in question is saying continuous evolving and changing. And I think the only way we Africans, you know, we can do better is by going back and developing our players. It is true that we have a lot of great players playing in Europe, doing very well. But of course, we also have to think about those playing in the country, how we can, you know, aid them to become much better players, how we can develop them. I have always believed that in football, when a player is more knowledgeable about the game, his decisions making becomes much better. And I think this is the direction I believe that we have to go, how we can develop our players through educational aspects. I think educating our young players, preparing them for the future, I think that's the key. And there's nothing anyone can, you know, say about it in a negative way. We have to develop our players. If we Africans, you know, over the years, people have said Africa is going to win the World Cup. I agree. We're going to win the World Cup, but we cannot win the World Cup just by talking. We have to develop the young generation. We have to lay a foundation for the young ones, you know, to be in a position to be able to compete, to be in a position to be able to develop, and also that we afford the next generations that are coming under this new generation to also understand the history of the country, the history of African football. And I pray, I hope one day, you know, that dream can really be actually come to true. When you talk about players' commitment with their clubs, with the national team, there's a whole lot of stress in terms of traveling, moving from one continent to another continent. There's a whole lot of factors. But of course, the proposal coming up with FIFA, I think it's a very good one, that we afford the players enough time for resting, and also it will afford the players time also to be with their club. You won't have this conflict. For example, in January, most of the players that are playing in Europe and the ones from Africa that are in the national team, they will be going with their national team. Basically, they will be 1 month off without the service of their club. But of course, if there is a plan that we aid and support the teams and also support the national team, it's a very welcome development. And it's important, the players, to rest. I think that period of resting for the players is key. And in the calendar, if there's a way it can be fixed, I think it's a welcome development.
The Nigerian legend made the comments in an interview that FIFA made available to the Associated Press. Amunike knows the rigors of the international calendar, having featured at the 1994 World Cup as the Super Eagles reached the last 16, before losing 2-1 to the Azzurri of Italy. The 50-year-old also believes an African nation will one day win the FIFA World Cup. FIFA's idea of rearranging the international schedule and holding the World Cup every 2 years instead of every 4 years is meeting resistance from some players, as well as some owners of teams in UEFA and the Premier League. I'm Prince Nesta, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Still on football, Cameroonian forward Eric Maxim Choupo-Moting, German footballer of Ivorian descent Serge Gnabry, Polish player Robert Lewandowski, and German winger of Senegalese descent Leroy Sané all scored to help Bayern Munich cruise to a 5-0 Champions League victory over Dynamo Kiev. The Bavarians are now the helm of Group E after scoring 8 goals in their opening 2 games. Defending champions Chelsea suffered a second consecutive defeat under their new coach Thomas Tuchel. Federico Chiesa's solitary goal enabled Juventus to secure another 1-0 win in Turin. Chelsea manager Thomas Tuchel was baffled by the performance.
I think it's very, very difficult to put on a high rhythm against a team that defends so, so deep. It was a bit like the completely way around, like the Manchester City game. And it was very, even if we defended deep against City, it was very, very difficult for them to create chances, and it was the same for us. The big difference was that we gave we had 2 big ball losses that cost us confidence and brought the belief in back into the stadium, because like how we played and dominated in the beginning, we could have been, of course, already 1-0 behind, but 1-0 up. But this was the problem, and Manchester City scored from a set piece against us with a deflected shot. Sometimes you need this. If a team defends so deep like we did against City and like you did against us, it's very hard to find your own rhythm. But we can do better. We can do better in penetrating the last 20 meters. We were lacking, of course, runs. We were struggling to find our rhythm and to keep the belief in our structure. And once we started to do other things than we wanted to do, we did mistakes. And that cost us a bit of belief, but was no problem because they couldn't score. And then we give a cheap goal away. And then, yeah, of course, things get more complicated because suddenly everyone duel is like a step closer for victory for Juventus. And it's exactly the situation that you want to avoid.
Barcelona's woes continued after they suffered a 3-0 humiliating defeat in the hands of Portugal giants Benfica, marking the second loss in their second Champions League group stage match. The Blaugrana earlier this month lost 3-0 to Bayern Munich and sit last in Group E. 5-time Ballon d'Or winner Cristiano Ronaldo slotted home an injury-time winner as Manchester United brushed aside Villarreal 2-1 at Old Trafford in a dramatic Champions League fixture in Group F. The Red Devils manager Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said luck was a bit on their side.
A very difficult game against a very good team. First half, we had lots of possession, but they counter-attacked really well. Transition attacked quickly and created some big, big moments in the game. And thankfully, we had the best goalkeeper in the world tonight. David was fantastic and very happy with his performance. Second half, they had more of the ball, it was still open, and they deserved to lead. But, you know, Old Trafford is magic. Champions League, Old Trafford. Sometimes that history can helped us. And tonight, Cristiano, of course, came up with a good goal, and Alex scored a fantastic goal.
The game was a rematch of the 2020-2021 Europa League final. Villarreal won that match 11-10 on post-match penalties following a 1-1 draw. I spoke with Kenyan sports journalist Mohamed Abubakar, who shared his thoughts regarding yesterday's Champions League fixtures.
What do you make of Manchester United's performance in last night's win against Villarreal?
That was a cracking match. Cristiano Ronaldo stealing the show again, Mr. Champions League. But overall, I mean, this match was really important for Manchester United, given they're coming on the back of a loss in their first game against Young Boys of Switzerland. So they were coming into this game knowing that they really, really needed to get those 3 points to be in contention for the next round of the Champions League. So you could feel the stakes were high yesterday, given the fact they went behind. The stakes were even higher now. I mean, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was feeling the pressure yesterday. And what I have to say for yesterday's match is he got his substitutions right, given the fact that he brought in Matic in midfield to control the pace of the attack. You know, they had to stay calm, given the fact that they had equalized with 30 minutes remaining, I think, before the game ended. They knew they had to try and go for the win. And bringing on Jesse Lingard and Edinson Cavani, you could see they brought energy in the attack. And if you have Cristiano Ronaldo in your attack, I mean, this guy can score half chances as well. So you always have a chance. And it was just befitting that Sir Alex Ferguson was in the stands yesterday. And you know, people were waiting for that Fergie time winner. So, you know, for Fergie's son, Cristiano Ronaldo, to score the winner, it was something special. I would say it was a really special night for Manchester United. 4 points now. I know it's just two games in, but it really, really puts them in a good place.
Cristiano Ronaldo is also coming off the backdrop of not scoring in the last two Manchester United games. They lost against West Ham. They also lost against Aston Villa during the weekend. Do you think Cristiano Ronaldo might actually not be the solution for every problem that Manchester United has?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, if teams come with a plan of trying to stop him and it actually works, then Manchester United will be finding themselves in problems. Because everyone knows now, you know, the qualities of Cristiano Ronaldo. If you just give him half a space or, you know, any chance, he would take it. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said it in one of his press conferences that when you have Cristiano in your team, you at least have a goal per game. So Manchester United now have to try and use that. So you know, Cristiano Ronaldo will always do his part, try to find that goal or two. But Manchester United as a team always have to make sure they're organized in terms of tactics, in terms of, you know, how they play from the back. I mean, yesterday there was a lot of, a number of people who really put in good performances. David De Gea as well. I mean, we have to mention that. But I feel if teams come in with a plan to stop Cristiano Ronaldo, then there might be problems for Manchester United moving forward. And I could feel yesterday that they really, really tried to stop him. But, I mean, Cristiano, with all his experience, he was always hoping he'd get that chance. And that goal he scored was not easy. I mean, it was at an angle. He had bodies in front of him, and he still managed to find the target and give United the winner. So it's interesting to see how it will pan out, especially the Champions League campaign. But in the English Premier League, we all know it's a tough, tough league. So let's just wait for 10 games into the league and we can be able to know if teams really can stop Cristiano Ronaldo.
And, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo is a goal poacher and reminds me of, you know, his coach Ole Gunnar Solskjaer himself, who regarded as one of the best poachers in history, together with Ruud van Nistelrooy, as far as Manchester United is concerned. And so another team that has really been lacking goal poaching ability for the last two games now, Chelsea. And, you know, they actually lost last night against Juventus. Your thoughts on the match?
I would say I wouldn't want to read too much into this result, given that, the previous game leading up to this Juventus game last night was against the English champions, Manchester City, and they lost that game 1-0. And in Turin as well, they lost 1-0 against not a very good side domestically, Juventus. But, I mean, we all know Italian sides, they are very, very organized. When they decide to turn up, they can turn up. I feel from the previous games I've seen Chelsea, they've had to change their style of play to suit Romelu Lukaku. I feel that has been a contribution to perhaps some of the results they've recorded, because they're sticking to that style. They want to accommodate Lukaku. Before that, I mean, they were trying different styles because they had a lot of attacking players. Hakim Ziyech, we had Timo Werner. We have the other German guy. His name just skipped me. But I feel the style of play they've adopted since Lukaku has come. I mean, Lukaku, let's not take anything away from him. He's a brilliant striker and he did very well in Italy. But I mean, if you have a defense partnership of the likes of Chiellini and Bonucci, it's very, very possible to shut players like Lukaku down. So I wouldn't want to read too much into the result. It's two games in, like I said. I feel Chelsea still have a strong chance to progress to the next round.
Which are some of the teams that you think actually stands a better chance of winning the Champions League this season, according to your opinion?
We have German champions, Bayern Munich, who look very, very strong. I mean, they have a very energetic coach, new coach, Nagelsmann. He's made some good signings. It's a mix of young, vibrant players and some experienced players there like Lewandowski. But I feel they have a very, very, very good chance. Another team that I feel can do well is Paris Saint-Germain. I wouldn't say they will go, I mean, favorites to win it, but they will reach at least the last four. I feel like any team with a combination of Lionel Messi, Neymar and Mbappe, if those three can be fit and gel in good time, they can reach far in the competition. And as we all know, Lionel Messi, Neymar have good experience in the Champions League. They've won the Champions League as well. So PSG would be right in there. I'd like to also mention Atletico Madrid. They look strong. Griezmann has found his mojo back. We have the likes of Luis Suarez, who keeps delivering, that guy. He has experience. He's won the competition as well. So Atletico Madrid are in the mix. And I know Real Madrid recorded a shock result this week. I feel they are also in the mix, given the fact that, you know, they are record winners of the competition. And they have a coach that knows how to win this competition, Carlo Ancelotti. So we cannot write them off. In terms of the English sides, it's very, very hard to pick. I know we have Chelsea, who are the defending champions, and I would back them to go far into the competition. Manchester United, I don't know how many times Cristiano Ronaldo will be helping them, but it's very early for me to say where Manchester United will reach in this competition, because they're not in a very, very good place in the group as well, in terms of position. So let them progress past the group stage, and then we will know. Pep Guardiola as well, Manchester City. I mean, he's getting close every season. I would also back him to reach far in the competition. So I'd say around five teams, I know I've mentioned a lot, stand a good chance.
It's interesting you mentioned PSG as part of the conversation. Messi actually coming off of the backdrop of an injury and, you know, scoring such a fantastic goal. What were your thoughts?
I mean, it just tells you the caliber of players, the likes of Messi and Cristiano. If there's one thing we've learned this week, is that these two players are still here and they're here to be counted. Lionel Messi, I mean, he's coming off a very busy summer, having won the Copa America with Argentina. You would understand he's a bit jaded, maybe knocks here and there. But a full fit Lionel Messi can play in any team for me. And given the fact that he's in a team like PSG, playing with other world-class forwards like Neymar, Mbappe, Mauro Icardi as well, very good striker, the likes of Di Maria. Once these players tick and he gets to adapt to the style of PSG and connect with the players very well and the coach and the system, I feel they will do well.
That was Kenyan sports journalist Mohamed Abubakar expressing his thoughts on last night's Champions League clashes.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
I'm Prince Nesta, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. I earlier spoke with former Kenyan international Titus Mulama regarding the current standards of football in the East African nation, compared with the 1990s and early 2000s, when he played for the Kenya national team.
Looking at the Kenyan Premier League, compare the Kenya Premier League standards that we have now and back then when you were playing. Are the standards going down or have they improved?
Different times, different challenges. But honestly speaking, you would expect that things should be better, because the guys who are running football at the top are youthful. So they know the ways of the current football, how it's run, how you get sponsors, how teams, how players should be managed, how teams should be managed. So we expected that being a youthful a leader or having youthful guys in the office, they have a lot of knowledge, and going with the times, they have real good knowledge about the game. But trying to compare now, I can say the standards are going down. Unfortunately, because there is nothing, we see no sponsors, no real straight to sponsors. We see sponsors pulling out of clubs, sponsorships are being, the contracts have been terminated. You see the standards of football, according to FIFA, we were at some point number 68 in the world. Now we are rooted at between number 104 and 109. It can only tell you. And it's been worse for the last five years. We have been going down, you see. So we really say, if you try to compare those times, yes, there were challenges, but you expected it to be better with this administration, the current times. So comparing them, I would say, no, the standards have not improved. If anything, they have gone down.
That was former Kenyan international Titus Mulama sharing his thoughts with me regarding the current standards of football in the East African nation. Nigeria won its third straight women's title in the recently concluded Women's Afrobasket Tournament in Yaounde, Cameroon. Their captain, Adara Eleonu, was voted the most valuable player. What's making the Tigress such a dominant force in African basketball? I spoke with the Kenya National Basketball Assistant Coach and Scout for the NBA outfit Toronto Raptors, a Cameroonian native, Abel Nson, who shared his thoughts while giving a summary of the tournament.
No, I was not surprised about Nigerians' dominance, because we have a lot of international players. They're players playing high-profile leagues and teams, so they had the upper hand in regards to other teams in terms of skill. So it was quite normal that they won. So the standards of the past Women's Afrobasket was not so low. It was okay based on the other years. We had a couple of upsets, like Team Kenya that upset Cape Verde. That was the first time that they ever beat Cape Verde. We had teams like Mali that had a young squad, managed to get all the way to the finals. Cameroon that came with a young squad and managed to beat Egypt. So it was a pretty good tournament generally in regards to talent. I ranked the Cameroonian team's performance very good based on the fact that it was a young team. A lot of them were new to this competition and new to playing together. The coaching staff was young, new. Coach Njoya is new and he's a young coach. They did very, very well. Team Kenya was all right. They lacked their best player in Felmas Koranga, so that was a big hit to the team. Hence, the team couldn't perform at the level that they were supposed to. I believe in her presence, they could have played a bit better. But be that as it may, overall, Team Kenya did okay in their first participation in so many years. And they also had a bunch of rookies that were leading the team, people who haven't played at this level yet. So this was a very good thing for them. Some of the highlights and surprises of tournaments, of course, Team Mali's performance, Team Cameroon beating Senegal in the third and fourth position, which showed a lot of prospect when it comes to African basketball. Because imagine, Ewodu, who was in Africa's top five from Cameroon, she's barely, 21, 22 years old? So the sky's the limit for her. So you can imagine by the next tournament they're going to play, how they're going to perform. So it was great to see that. The coaching standard, I don't think it's the coaching standard with different from women and men's league. Generally speaking, the coaching standard in Africa is average for now. We have to do a bit more, and that'll come by us using technology a bit better. We don't do enough video sessions. We don't cut film enough. We don't show players enough times how they play and where their mistakes come from so that we can make analysis based on that. So once we can start using a lot more of, video coordination and using real actual stats from tendencies and whatnot, we'll be able to improve the level of the game, generally speaking. So that's what will be able to make the level of the game a bit better. When a lot of coaches start using apps like Huddle and the Synergy, etc., there's so many apps that can help you cut games so you can know how many moves the team does, what kind of tendencies they have, how many screens do they set, which direction do they set those screens, etc., etc. Those things help teams become better. So these are some of the tools that once we introduce more to African basketball and more so in female basketball in Africa, it will help improve the level of the game and, of course, availability of film and footage. In as much as FIBA is doing what they can do to raise money by giving it to private contractors to produce the images, but they need to find a way to avail those images to the teams at least, such that you can use that film as background information to be able to cut and analyze, and that will help improve the game. The more you can read what somebody does, the more that person has to improve because they have to find out something else.
That was the Kenya National Basketball Assistant Coach and scout for the NBA outfit Toronto Raptors, Cameroonian native Abel Nson, with some of the highlights of the Women's AfroBasket Championship in Yaounde. I'm Prince Nesta, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. On to boxing. WBC champion Tyson Fury had harsh words for Deontay Wilder ahead of their third fight on October 9th. The two battled to an evenly scored draw in 2018, and in 2020, Wilder's team threw in the towel in the seventh round after a barrage from Fury. The British fighter had disparaging words about Wilder's excuses for the loss.
I think it just made him a weaker character and less of a man, less of a fighter, because, you know, when you get beat, you get beat. Shake the man's hand and move on. It's, lots of fighters have lost. Muhammad Ali lost fights. Mike Tyson lost fights. But it's what they do after they lose that makes them who they are. You know, and I've not really got a lot to say about what Deontay Wilder was saying. It's none of my real concern, because when some people lose, they have to make up an excuse why they lost. And that's probably Deontay Wilder's reasons for going into this second fight, into convince himself of whatever happened. And that's up to him. Good luck to him in the fight, and we'll see. We'll see if he can do anything better in their second fight. Third fight, rather.
Their fight in Las Vegas next month was originally scheduled for July, but was cancelled after Fury contracted COVID-19. He says he has fully recovered and is ready for the fight.
But am I 100%? I'm 1,000,000%. Look at me. I'm in fantastic shape. I'm as fit as a fiddle. I'm sparring 12 rounds. I've got the best sparring partners in the world. I'm absolutely ready. I'm ready today, tomorrow, and forever. I'll always be ready. And I'll never make excuses, because that's not me. I get in, I do the best I can, don't make any excuses, and get on with it. And that's it. When I beat Wilder, I'll be on to the next one, so on and so forth. It's never about the opponent. I don't care what they're going to do. I don't care what they bring to the ring. It's the Tyson Fury show until I hang them gloves up and then anybody else can take over what they want to do.
That was WBC champion Tyson Fury, who gave an online virtual news conference on Wednesday. Prince Nesta, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In the United States, university sports are hugely popular, and some, particularly football and basketball, are big business. Traditionally, universities have given scholarships to top young athletes, some from other countries, to play on their teams. The National College Athletic Association, or NCAA, has long said that students who participate in sports cannot be paid for their work on the field or the court, and they can't earn money from advertising endorsements. On Wednesday, the National Labor Relations Board issued a ruling that could change all that. Ben Thomas for the Associated Press reports.
The National Labor Relations Board has declared college athletes in money-making sports to be employees of their schools. The statement came in a 9-page memo from the NLRB's top lawyer. General Counsel Jennifer Abruzzo writes, "The freedom to engage in far-reaching and lucrative business enterprises makes players at academic institutions much more similar to professional athletes who are employed by a team to play a sport while simultaneously pursuing business ventures to capitalize on their fame and increase their income." Abruzzo also threatened action against schools, conferences, and the NCAA if they continue to use the term student-athlete. She says the term was designed to obscure the employment relationship with college athletes and discourage them from pursuing their rights. The guidance could lead to expansive rights for players to unionize and negotiate over their working conditions. I'm Ben Thomas.
The NCAA says it disagrees with the guidance. And that wraps up the September 30th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Mukbilia Baru. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Prince Nestor sitting in for Sunny Young in Washington. That's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.